Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
More Dirt and Sprague.
Do you trust someone who doesn't like a Pop-Tart?
Dirt.
Can I give you a hot take that might make people look at me and call me an idiot? I think Pop-Tarts are disgusting.
Sprague.
I used to raw dog Pop-Tarts religiously.
Dirt and Sprague.
I'm anti-Pop-Tart.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Hope your Mondays are off to a great start.
Ready.
Got a lot to get to. Everybody had a good weekend. First 2 hours of the show have flown by. We talked about baby showers and fences at the start of the show.
Oh, man.
Slowly transitioned our way into football. Some injuries in the National Football League, and the dirty pull rolled on with number 10, BYU. There is your synopsis of the last 2 hours. Still to come, we have not talked about a lot of the bad play in NFL preseason football. One of them on display last night. I asked a question when you're on vacation to Swigart, and I want to ask you.
Yeah.
We'll get to that coming up. Some more tidbits out of the NFL preseason, and anything else that comes out on the Jed York situation.
We think we're going to say something here, and we're not going to tell you this is accurate. Our conclusions are starting to go a little Robert Crafty, is what I would say.
Yeah, it feels very much like, and a lot of listeners are texting, that it feels like he was caught up in something that he wasn't necessarily a part of, but was a part of, if that makes sense.
I mean, he's being let go. It's a two-day, it's a one-county jail thing, so obviously he's not committed some huge...
He was not trafficking individuals, but he was maybe using an institution that was using trafficked individuals.
Exactly, yeah, which is why he had to pay the $160 fine to the human traffic. Yeah, I mean, look, it's...
I just don't
get
the...
You're a billionaire owner who lives in the Bay. What about East Palestine, Ohio? Are you like, I'm going to do this?
Is that where he's like, yeah, what is the backstory?
He's not from there. He grew up with the Niners.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's not a connection in any way. I don't get how you get to the point of owning an NFL team. I don't know if he's married. I don't know what his family life is. You want to go get some strange, go get some strange. Whatever. Like, go, you can pay people to, it's like when you see a rich person.
He's got a wife, by the way.
Well, of course he does. I mean, that's not shocking.
It's a long time.
It's like people with a lot of money getting arrested for DUIs. What is ever the reason to, like, you have the ability to have somebody else take care of that for you and not put yourself in that
an
position.
NFL owner, it's like you should just have like a driver, period.
Yes, you're a billionaire, I'm assuming, or maybe he's not because he's a Nepo kid. Maybe
he is.
High millionaire,
owns
whatever.
An NFL team.
Sure. Like, go pay somebody to be a sugar daddy, like, on the side. There are ways around this to not get swept up in a human trafficking ring.
Yeah, he's got a full family,
by
the way.
At a masseuse parlor in East Palestine, Ohio.
I mean, we don't know if it's a masseuse parlor, to be fair. It was not cited yet. But, yeah, he's married with kids.
Keep it classy, Jed. Keep it classy. That's going on in Niner.
Bad look for them.
Niner fandom as their season. It's a long way. Oh, wait, no, that's right. It's about 2 weeks away.
Yeah, but Kyle's mustache might make all of this good.
Hey, you beat the Rams, nobody gives a rip, right? On opening night in Australia.
Can I give you a really hot take?
Yeah.
You like to joke about yourself and your appearance from time to time.
Sure.
You have a killer mustache situation, and you don't let it just be.
Oh, I need just
you
solo.
Dabble,
yeah,
and then you grow out the rest. But you got a killer stash yourself.
Just go solo stash, nothing else. Shave the rest of the face off.
Here's my hottest
take. My face is too fat.
I disagree with you.
I'm worried about that.
Your wife may not like this idea by me, but I think you should have just the stash right at the start of the duck football season.
Ooh.
Until the end.
I'm contemplating growing my hair out again. I haven't got a cut in a while. I don't know how long we're going to go. TBD on that one.
So I've been watching the new Ted Lasso.
Yes. I haven't seen the newest one, but I saw the first two episodes.
But you've seen Beard, the assistant coach?
Yes. Yes. The disheveled beard.
The hairs to the shoulders.
Losing it. The whole breakup thing about, your boyfriend's back.
We haven't gotten the
back.
Details
it's,
yet.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good.
It's been off to a really good start. Yeah. Anyways, Jed York got arrested this morning. Hello, everybody. Hope your Mondays are off to a great start. Let's go to college football, shall we? I don't know if you know this. If you've heard the liners on the station, you know what begins this weekend?
Well, God, I know it does, God. And I'm excited, but also...
I love, as a college football P1, it's my favorite sport. I love college football. I can't wait for it to begin. I chuckle every year at the idea. How does the NFL open their season?
On a one-off night.
NBC, yeah. Primetime,
right.
Super Bowl champions.
Exactly.
This year,
Raise a Super Bowl banner.
Rematch.
Yeah. Yep.
800 million people will watch it. Every living being on the planet will be tuned in to NBC, waiting all day for Sunday night, a.k.a. Wednesday night.
Well, they're also doing the hump day thing since it's starting on a hump day.
Phenomenal commercial. Yeah. An ad campaign. Mike. And then I think about how college football starts on a weekend where it's pretty irrelevant. There's only like six games. It's at 9 o'clock in the morning in Dublin between two unranked teams.
It's usually never great teams starting. It's not Ohio State, Texas starting the year.
Why are we? This is like the I want to get in the hot tub, but I'm just gonna put my toe in. Like, nah, dude, get your ass in the hot tub. What are we doing here?
Right.
The way college football starts is hilarious to me. I will be watching. It is week zero. It begins on Saturday technically, and then everybody else plays a week from Saturday. Let's go to a couple of Oregon related things. I got some other quarterback news I want to get to, and some battles that have been decided in that sport. But one of the growing issues or fears going into the start of the year now is we're getting to see a lot of these guys. We get court rulings and say you're still eligible. And for the first time ever, we have a player who was playing in training camp. And there was videos of him going through warmups yesterday for the Browns, who is now going to be playing at LSU. And it's pretty funny that Tom Unkin had a great quote on this after their game. He's dealing with all this Deshaun Watson nonsense, and then for some reason named him the starter. But he joked about how Lane Kiffin called him earlier in the week, and he didn't return his phone call. He's like, why the hell is Lane Kiffin calling me? And then he joked after the game, I think they played on Saturday, he said, well, now I know why he was calling, because he wants his tight end back, who played with him. Daquan Wright is his name. He played with him at Ole Miss, and if he clears waivers, he's going to go play for LSU. So he's gone through training camp. He's gone through a couple of preseason games and now expected to join LSU. Dan Lanning was asked about that. They had their last fall scrimmage. We can get to some notes out of that. But here is Dan Lanning on that question, the guys returning potentially from NFL rosters.
I mean, I think there's a lot of negatives that are involved around this. One, once you go to the NFL, to me, you're in the NFL. You don't get the opportunity to come back. Two, you know, most of us have built our rosters and you have a limited roster limit now. So if you invited somebody back to your team, that means you're kicking somebody else off your team, right, to match your roster limits. I don't think that's fair to the players that worked all summer, all spring, and put themselves in position to be ready to work for a team, you know, to have somebody come back. But ultimately, you know, it used to be once you had an agent or once you went and did the combine or once you went to mini, I mean, all those things qualified as you are no longer an amateur. You're a professional now once you declare for the draft. So to let any of those players come back, you know, fair or unfair to them, it's unfair to the sport.
That was an angle of it that I hadn't really thought about, the idea of kicking guys off of your team, essentially, or pulling scholarships because you're getting other guys in return. Some of these are still up in the air. It mm-hmm. just is another example of the chaos that faces the sport where you're adding players to your roster and the season begins less than 2 weeks from now.
It's also, to me, I mean, look, we probably all agree kind of like this shouldn't be allowed.
No.
You cannot be in the NFL, whether you're a fringe guy or not.
And whether you got drafted or not, it doesn't matter.
Suddenly be turned around. I think the other part is, and I agree with everything Dan said there, the ugly nature of college football is going back to pre-NIL days. Dude, people were kicked off scholarships routinely, and it was never reported and talked about.
Yeah.
I heard stories at Oregon State, and that's Oregon State. I can't fathom what bigger programs were doing at all times with guys who were just given up on and lost their academic scholarship. It's happened for a very, very long time. It's just a little louder now because you got this new crop of guys saying, actually, out of the NFL, I want to go back to college to make a couple more dollars.
Right, because I'm not going to make a team or I'm not going to get a chance. Yeah.
Right, and the idea that, by the way, NFL teams won't touch these guys if they leave the NFL for college. Dude, if they put up numbers and look amazing, the NFL will sniff back around.
Yeah.
They want the most talented guys. What I find fascinating, aside from this being allowed, is just how we're making the judgments on it. How was Anthony Akerson allowed to do it for Oregon State back, but Van Wells, offensive lineman, not okayed? Like, the judges deciding who is and who is not is very confusing to me.
It doesn't make any sense. It's also not even, and this is the important thing to remember, like, when you get these temporary restraining orders that allow you the ability to come back and play, that's not the judge saying, we agree you have more eligibility.
Right.
It's saying, we agree that this is a case worth listening to and contemplating.
Sure.
And in the meantime, because we have not had a ruling on it yet, you were then granted that relief and able to play.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, a year and a half from now, whenever the official court case goes down,
they might be ruled ineligible, and then we spent 2 years allowing these guys to play. I didn't pull it. It was on Friday, and I knew we were going to play the landing thing today, but Marcus Freeman had a great rant on this. He was asked, I think it was on Friday, about the idea of bringing guys back, because a lot of big, like Indiana's doing this, a lot of big programs are saying, hey, we got guys who want to come back and play, go ahead. Mm-hmm. And Marcus Freeman was like, dude, school starts on Monday. Classes begin on Monday. And you want, and I know that that's a laughable thing, and they're not student athletes, ha ha ha. And we've done that, you know, this quarterback's working at a golf course, and that's his only class. I get it. There are a lot of people that way, but a lot of them do still go to school and try and get a degree and take classes. And his point of like, how am I going to enroll a kid? Mm-hmm. Please explain to me how in the next 48 hours I enroll a kid, make him academically eligible to play, and oh, by the way, classes begin in 48 hours. It's an absolute mockery of the system.
I think the tough thing, too, is like we are in a moment with this sport where I'd rather be talking about kickoffs. I'd rather be talking about, like, is Mayava going to live up to the hype? And this weekend we see it, right? Like, and we'll get to that.
Yes.
We have Dante Moore stuff. I think I have the position of, it's hilarious and has been the last couple of years to hear about the lack of consistency, the lack of guidance, the lack of real rules, how it's chaos, it's anarchy. Why are some schools paying $50 million for a roster and only some schools can only afford 10? Like, I love all of the complaining, and then the people complaining are the ones dabbling in all of the controversial, weird stuff.
Right.
Like, how are you legitimately... Right. A Power Four big program coach, how is Lane Kiffin going to have any leg to stand on at a podium complaining about the nature or world of college football when he's taking in DaQuan Wright,
right,
and also, by the way, leaving a playoff team before the actual playoff?
Right.
You are not, I mean, I hate to say this, I believe in coaches sound, you are not allowed to have an opinion if you're just going to dabble in all the weird, gross, controversial stuff of it and then tell me how unfair or how difficult everything is.
Right.
Like, you can't do both.
No.
You just can't. If you have a firm stance, it sounds like Lanning does, which is good for him.
I'm glad he does, dude. I don't want it. I mean, I don't know who would even be eligible to come back. I don't know how many other guys are going to make or not make rosters or who could potentially even get another year. Your roster's set, dude. Like, the message it sends to recruits in years to come, if a judge decides randomly in Ohio that these eligible players might be available,
right,
I just lost my scholarship. I could lose it at any moment because some random judge says that this guy can come back to the team.
Exactly.
That's not the message you want to send to the guys that you're trying to recruit. Because if I'm a recruit, I'm paying attention to that. Are you booting guys off a scholarship? And you're not wrong. That's gone on forever in the world of college football. And now I think it's gotten to the point where you have to – they have to remain on, in terms of an academic scholarship. Like, you can't unenroll them from the school, so they can decide to continue. But most of these guys want to go play elsewhere, and so that doesn't mean that much at the end of the day. It's all broken, it's all dirty, and I'm with you 100%. That's always been my big critique of guys who complain about the tampering and the transfer portal that then turn around and literally do it themselves.
See Dabo Swinney, who complained for years about it, making money, I'm going to quit. Oh, transfer, we don't do that here. And now what? You're in your third year of portal years. You're getting your ass handed to you. You're falling off the platform of one of the best programs in the country.
And what are you doing?
Who dabbled harder in the portal this year than they ever have combined of all the years previous?
Still waiting on you to quit, Dabo. Still waiting on you to quit. Good stuff from Lanning on that. We got some notes from their last fall scrimmage. We can get to that maybe a little bit later on.
We got notes from fall scrimmages?
Dude, I'm a sicko. You know I got notes from fall
scrimmages.
I know
you are, but
you know
I'm surprised even you take anything away
from scrimmages. I got a couple of names to watch.
I like that approach.
Guys, because last year we weren't talking about some of the young guys, right, and who was
the running backs.
Running back. At this point all last year, we did not know that there was going to be, you know, two freshman backs being the headliner guys, right?
We didn't know Brandon Finney Jr. was going to be
the corner that he was, right? So there's a couple of names that are like, when you read the tea leaves and you're like, oh, people keep bringing that guy up. That's interesting. All right. Mm-hmm. But this was it. So this was on the Brandon Walker College Football Show. He got Todd McShay on. And not to relitigate the NFL draft, but I did find it an interesting answer and also kind of what the thoughts are going into the year for Dante Moore, who decided to return for another season. So he had Todd McShay on his show, and he talked about that the draft process last year, what scouts were saying on Dante Moore, and then what are the expectations coming into this year.
And from my intel, they hadn't made a decision. It was going to be a very difficult one because Mendoza was more ready now. Dante Moore's ceiling was higher.
Okay.
So, listen, Oregon is loaded talent wise, and I actually think, in a certain way, that they're even more loaded this year. the talent around Dante wasn't as good as everyone wants to say it was. So now you come back. It's a new coordinator. I want to see how he handles that. I think that they're better suited at running back. I think that they're a little bit more veteran and talented maybe at wide receiver. So this is going to be a huge year for Dante. I'm telling you right now, man, Dante goes in as the number one guy.
Yeah.
Dante might have been, had he elected to come out, the number one quarterback taken ahead of Fernando Mendoza.
I thought that was interesting because that wasn't even really a thought that we had before we even knew what Dante was going to do. It felt like it was a clear-cut Mendoza one, likely Dante Moore two. He says the door was a little bit more open. I agree with the assessment, to be honest with you. There's no doubt Mendoza's more ready to play right now in the NFL. He just had so many more snaps than Dante in college at his time at Cal as a multi-year starter and then obviously at Indiana.
His size helps a lot, too.
And then there's the idea of, like, man, Dante makes throws that just your jaw drops to the floor, but he needs to be more seasoned and polished, and the thought of maybe the ceiling could be a little bit higher there. But the idea that he goes into the season, according to people he's talking to around the NFL, is quarterback number one. We know it's a big expectation year, and the pressure of the world is on their shoulders, and this just further solidifies it from another angle of, like, you go deliver, you're the number one pick in the draft,
yeah,
and those are the expectations for you going into this year.
So here's a question I have for you. We know what's on the line for Dante. It's to be the number one pick and to maybe win the Heisman, or at least look like the best quarterback for most people. What's the game, the first game of their season, where you kind of put it to the test?
It's a great question. Do you do it for USC? It is on the road.
That's,
I think USC would be better.
You know,
like,
yeah,
you're not going to do it before then. If Oregon's having troubles offensively before then, that's
a whole
different conversation.
If Oklahoma State or Boise State is a struggle for him,
right, it's a whole different conversation.
We're going to be like, okay, maybe he's not going to take that step. But yeah, probably USC, just out of the fairness of,
that's the one.
Many think they could take the playoff step, so at worst, they're 10-2.
Right. It's the hard part about where Oregon's at right now is, like, how many games can you in terms of just a talent standpoint, how many teams is it fair to compare in terms of the way that you're performing, if that makes sense? There's not a lot of them on their schedule this year. Ohio State will certainly be one. You don't play Indiana this year unless you get to a conference championship or playoff scenario again. And you got USC, who's going to be should be better defensively, but also they have a coordinator calling plays for the first time, I want to say, since like 2020. It's been
good
a minute.
Coach, though.
He's historically
pretty
a good coach. He's a great personality. Don't know the disagreement there. But it's also, he hasn't done it for 5 years, and the game's changed a little bit, and we'll see if he still has his fastball. So that USC and Ohio State are really the two games in the regular season. Maybe you throw Michigan into that bunch because of the level of NFL talent that exists on the field for Michigan, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Those are the games he's going to be comped at. The question of, can he light up a bad defense is not there. Dante Moore can light up
that.
A bad defense.
Yes.
It's, can he handle it when you're playing against comparable star-to-star talent, and it just doesn't happen often on Oregon's schedule.
He's an odd player in the sense of, like, you're right on. We can see the throws when you make them, but he had a few games last year where I'm like, I'm not really sure how to feel.
Absolutely.
Like, if I asked you how you feel about him as an NFL quarterback, maybe you lean in and you say, he's got good size, he's smart, and we'll see this year that he'll prove that he has picked up on his
great touch, great accuracy.
Right.
He needs a little more arm strength. But
like, I watched the Iowa game, and for 90% of that game, they did nothing.
Right.
Right?
McShay, so this is the unique part about him.
The
is
Indiana
that,
game, he's seeing Connelly's double hesitating.
Right.
Like, he's an odd player to try to evaluate from a non-NFL coaching perspective.
This was the point that McShay made that I thought was valid, and it was, when you look at Oregon last year, again, remember what we were saying a year ago now, right? Like, Danny Meringue's coming in yelling at me in the studio that they're going to go 8-4. Like, they were replacing literally everybody from that team the year before. There weren't playoff or bus expectations necessarily. I laughed at that notion, but that was the thought. And then you go in a little bit deeper. McShay pointed this out in terms of the draft evaluators and the way that they felt about him. Who was Oregon playing at running back?
Freshman,
right? No, Whittington was a good player, obviously, but
right,
two true freshmen. Their best wide receiver on the team was what? A true freshman.
A freshman.
Evan Stewart was supposed to be it. He didn't play all season, so you didn't have your number one weapon. Kenyon Sadiq, who was a freak athletically from the tight end position, missed a chunk of games in the middle of the year and was dealing with some back and butt issues for some hard falls. Your offensive line had moments, in particular the Iowa game, where you're banged up and you're without two or three starters, right? So you're not fully healthy. And so it was the thought of the NFL GMs looking at that and saying the supporting cast was good, but maybe not to the level of where your mind would go usually for an Oregon offense. You know what will not be the argument this year? Now, you do have the new coordinator, and there are obviously questions on the offensive line. Running back depth is great. Wide receiver room might be the best in the country.
you might have, again, the number one tight end in the NFL draft next year in Jamari Johnson. Like, there's not that built-in, like, yeah, but he's throwing to a true freshman on the outside anymore. You're loaded at a lot of the skill position places. And so the downturns, if I were a GM trying to look optimistically, I would say that's a part of it. Weather played a part in some of their games. But there's no doubt. The Wisconsin game, dude, they were up. That was a 7-0 game in the third quarter.
Yeah, it was an ugly game.
And he broke his nose, yep. And then they took him out, and they ended up winning, I think, 21-0 or whatever it was. Like, there were some absolute clunkers from their offense last year.
First of all, we're against it. How dare you? Ohio State University until it's not Ohio State University with receivers. I'm sorry. That's just kind of
That's fair. That's totally fair. I'm just saying Oregon's in the conversation from a collective group. Nobody tops Jeremiah Smith.
Here's my only rebuttal to all this. These are all very good points laid out. When you go to the NFL and you're drafted 1, 2, or 3.
You're going to a bad situation.
You're going good to luck, what brother. We just talked about. You're not going to third best receiving core in the country and top 5 offensive line and 4 running back. You know what I mean? You're going to the crap of the crap.
You got to elevate everybody. You're not wrong.
And I think that's sometimes the tough part of gauging these guys from these programs. It's not that they don't succeed, but the idea is real for people. Ohio State's quarterback history. What is it?
Not great in the NFL.
Alabama's quarterback history.
Horrible.
It's not stellar. Like, you look at some of the bigger programs, you have a tough time. Florida.
Georgia.
I mean, these are all elite programs, and it's tough because so many of these guys have these cushions, have these lives. Matt Leinart, USC. When they're faced with, you don't have this, this, or that.
Yeah, it's hard to do.
What are you? And I think that's the tough thing with Dante is he could absolutely be stellar this year. I'm kind of anticipating that he will be. How do I gauge what not having kind of all of it, but also his first year back starting
right.
versus having the loaded roster and more manageable maybe from a schedule standpoint in some ways? So I think it's a tough thing with the NFL engaging these guys from a pro quarterback standpoint is what you had versus what you're dealt versus how did you overcome versus just
totally
succeeding
fair.
With what you have.
Hey, just go be the number one pick, win a Heisman Trophy and a national championship. No pressure this year, Dante. You got it, buddy. Ready, break. Let's stick in college football. I got a couple of notes from fall camp from Oregon I'll give you. And then also, we got some starters being named in the SEC. We'll dive back into the NFL coming up about 20 minutes from now, including some stinker performances over the weekend, but a little more college football next on The Fam.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All righty, welcome back in, 8:32. Happy Monday morning to everybody. It's been a fun show so far. We'll dive back into the NFL. Do you see more of this player or that player in this player? If that makes sense, we'll get to it coming up next.
Did you forget about some of the college football rules, too?
What new rules do we have?
So we have the fair catch kick.
Okay.
Under another rule approved Thursday by the Oversight Committee, a team can choose to attempt a kick after a completed or awarded fair catch. The kick will be a field goal place kick with a holder or a drop kick from the spot where the returner caught the ball.
That's an actual obscure NFL rule.
We've seen
rule.
That in the NFL randomly and rarely,
adopted
right?
That.
It's in college now.
Okay. But that happened last year in a game, didn't it? And it was like, this is the first time this has happened
maybe.
In however many years.
Another rule change on punts where jersey number exceptions, players who do not wear numbers 50 to 79 are used. The snapper and two adjacent linemen on either side who are lined up in or touching the tackle box are ineligible receivers by position.
Yeah, this is the one the coaches are all mad about because nobody wanted it.
That just sounded like absolute gibberish.
Offensive pass interference penalties will be 10 yards. Previously, the penalty for the offensive pass interference was?
15.
15, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that. 15 seems like such a huge punishment.
It seems a bit aggressive.
And uniforms. The Oversight Committee did not approve a proposal that would have required players to wear leg coverings from the top of their shoes to the bottom of their pants.
I'm glad we're focusing on the important issues.
NCAA governance. They still haven't fixed the targeting problem.
Targeting is still a major issue. Yeah. Although I do feel like there's been a bit of a wink and a nod behind closed doors. I don't know. Maybe just from watching a lot of Oregon. I don't remember a lot of their guys getting tossed for targeting last year.
Well, we can't define targeting clearly.
No, I feel like there's more of a wink and a nod behind the scenes of like, let's not.
Also, the suspension carryover is
ridiculously dumb.
So dumb.
I thought they reduced that, or they're at least allowing it to be reviewed and...
That would be great.
Don't do it. I mean, if you're tossing him, I disagree with that.
15-yard flag. Have it be yellow cards.
You.
This is so simple.
I know.
One yellow card, 15-yard flag. You
red,
do it again,
out.
Get your ass out of the game.
Exactly.
It's so simple. Yeah. Just solve the
issue. We got a red card at the end of our match against LAFC because a guy got a second yellow.
Yeah.
We're playing one man down, and we almost gave up a game-winning goal.
And that was a sub. On, baby. He just came in. That's the guy they got from Europe, Vincent
Janssen. Just
came
flying around and started taking hands off.
Two quick yellows.
Boom, boom. See you later, buddy. Before we get to some quarterback news, a couple of random names that keep sticking out. Oregon had their last fall scrimmage as they get ready. Game week will begin next week, right? We got to kick off a week from Saturday against Boise State down at Autzen Stadium.
Can you imagine if it was Portland State, by the way?
Yeah.
Talk about a depressing 2 weeks.
I did have a fun.
You're not excited for Portland State.
I did have
starting.
A fun chat with the boss. Got some family who likes to go to the first game every year. It's kind of a family tradition. We used to do that when we were kids. My dad would take me and my brother down to the opening game. Usually, it'd be like Fresno State or Houston, or you know, and you go have fun, run around Autzen Stadium.
12:30, Boise State should be a glorious. Late summer day?
I'm going to take the brother and my nephew and nieces down, let them go run around a little bit. Teddy Ballgame might even make an appearance in game one. Mm. TBD, we'll see. He's 0-1 in his history at Autzen Stadium, so we got to get that monkey off his back.
Yeah.
If he falls
to 0-2, I'm not taking him to another game.
Especially if it's Boise State.
Never again will I take him to a game. He's banned from Autzen for the rest of his life if he goes to 0-2, but the boss did have a funny joke of like, you know anybody who wants to go to the Portland State game? Anybody want to go?
Would you go?
Anybody want tickets?
If you go, because
you should take Teddy Ball game to the Portland State.
It's a Friday night kick at 7:30, man.
Well, if you want to get the plus,
stop it.
Bedtime is 8:30.
Also, I know where you're going. You're going to do the whole. If you want to make sure he wins, they're 30-point favorites.
Yeah.
I know Boise State's going to be good.
No, the Portland State game doesn't have a line, and it's not quite 30. I think it's
24 and a
25
half.
And a half.
Okay, I'm close enough.
Don't overblow it here.
They're almost 30-point favorites against the best group of six team in the nation.
Yeah, I'll take them down. A couple of random names that keep popping up. This one I did not expect, but as I read and listen to things about fall camp, we know who they got it back, obviously. De'Aaron Hill coming back, Davison coming back. The injury fear-mongering we had with him for a brief moment was gone. Brandon Smith is a true freshman, is a name at running back that I continue to read and hear about that is playing. I don't even think he was their top-ranked freshman in the class. I think that was Tredarian Bell or Ball, excuse me. But Brandon Smith is a name that continues to pop up when you talk to people about who's looking good down there. They love their trio of newcomers at wide receiver, Messiah Hampton, Jalen Lott, and Gatlin Bear. Gatlin Bear was the one who did the two-year mission. So he was a five-star in whatever class that would have been, 2023, two-year mission, so he's a 20-year-old freshman. And I am now to the point where I legitimately, like Lanning talked about this on Saturday after the scrimmage, of they feel like they got their eight guys up front that they know and they like and they're starting to get a rapport with. I think we're legitimately going to see a true freshman start in game one on the offensive line. They love both those guys. Mm. Tommy Tofi is probably the leading candidate.
Okay.
He showed up in the spring, and Big Manny didn't show up until the summer. The size and weight of those two guys were released, and I'm sure some of these numbers are cooked a little bit, but like both of them checked in as 18-year-old, 19-year-old true freshmen at 6'5", 6'6", 330, 340 pounds.
Jesus Christ. True freshman that big?
I mean, the idea of starting a true freshman on the offensive line is a little daunting. I like the start of the schedule because you get him some games to kind of get his feet wet a little bit before things heat up at the end of September against USC.
Yeah.
But I do think a true freshman is going to start on the offensive line, and it'll be Tommy Tofi.
How are we feeling about that? You got to trust the Danimal, but
I trust him.
True,
I'm worried about
tend to make mistakes.
Worried about the bigger opponents and bigger matchups of the year, because that's I talked about this while you're out with their O line. Like, their O line's been really, they've been a Joe Moore Award finalist for 3 years in a row now.
Yeah.
But in their biggest games against Indiana or Ohio, like, they haven't played well against elite units. That's the weird conundrum that they're in. That they've been great to where you can recognize them for a season-long award for a position group, but then you fast forward to Indiana and it's like, we can't block anybody up front. What the hell's going on?
I also think some of that, like, it's nice to be in the consideration. We know, like, all things considered, they are one of the best groups. I think it was 2 years ago they became a finalist. I thought that was a bit of...
They got off to such a bad start that it was like...
It's Idaho and Boise State to me, even if you end up being a good group and make the finalist list. I just thought that was like...
Had a hard time blocking Idaho in week one. What are we doing here, man?
It's disqualifying to me. And I don't care who was playing center.
Rule you out of the
running. Idaho, bro?
Get out of here.
Just couldn't block Idaho?
Get out of here.
What are we doing here?
A couple of starters were named in the world of college football. Keelon Russell won the job at Alabama.
Yeah, see you later, Austin Mack, dude. How about being loyal?
He was the guy who followed him. Yeah, committed to Washington. He was going to be a recruit in that next class at Washington. Followed him to Alabama. And Russell, if you want a connection there, he was DeCorian Moore's quarterback at Duncanville in Texas. Kind of came out of nowhere. Senior year ended up being one of the highest ranked recruits in the country. Commits to Alabama. Not a surprise, I think, for a lot of people who followed that job. Alabama's fascinating this year, man. I don't know what to make of them. He's a very boom. Like when you see highlights of him, you're like, "Oh my god, maybe this guy is it."
I think 9-3. I think they comfortably fly under the radar at 9-3.
Are you a playoff team at 9-3?
No. I know they're Alabama, and I know we said this last year, and they were given a benefit despite getting bludgeoned in the SEC title game. No, I unless we have a weird conference championship situation, I don't think you're getting in at 9-3.
Yeah,
I think we've asserted this. We've established enough to say 10-2 or better has to be the barometer here.
That's the benchmark.
Sans a Clemson winning the ACC on a 50-plus yard field goal, right?
Right.
I don't think 9-3 Bama gets in, but I also think despite legend existing, most people go, okay, sophomore quarterback, you know, was fine navigating the waters. Maybe you get a bad loss in there, but for the most part, 9-3 with a guy that's going to return.
Yeah, if he plays well, gives you some optimism going into next year.
I think you're going to feel pretty decent about that.
The other one just named this morning in the SEC, and the last time this team did it, to be fair, they went to a college football playoff, so maybe they know what they're doing here. Tennessee is going to name and did name Faison Brandon, their starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great name. He was a top five player in the country, true freshman cat. Remember, they had Nico a couple years ago takes in the playoffs, and you had that whole weird snafu of him transferring. Tennessee's been a factory for recruiting elite quarterbacks. Brandon is the next one in line, and so they're going to try the true freshman quarterback thing, which, again, to their point, they made the playoff with Nico a couple years ago, but not always a guarantee that it works out. So you're going to have a true freshman. Their first game of note is against Texas at the end of September.
Yeah, I mean, they're an interesting team in the sense of, like, I saw some SEC people I follow that are like, this team's actually way more loaded than people talk about.
Really good.
If you
but
can
do
just,
you have the right quarterback now? That's the question.
Can you manage it? Because I don't truly believe in starting the true freshman day one. I think the track record speaks higher than the one-off situations you can give me here and there. That makes me nervous, but what are we to think of Heupel if they go like 7-5?
Yeah. Again, is the quarterback playing well, or does he
7-5? I would assume that's
a no. That's a no, right? Yeah. They do have Georgia Tech in non-conference, I believe. And as I looked it up, I want to correct. Nico was a redshirt freshman. He played the bowl game and then got the job the next year, and then he entered the portal. So a little bit different, but still young quarterback who has had success. That was Ohio State to me last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had the best roster in the sport, but they had a quarterback who wasn't quite ready to do it, especially in the big moments. And so is that Tennessee this year? Time will tell. But a couple of starters out of SEC country getting named over the weekend. Let's go to the National Football League, shall we? Is this player going to be more of this or more of that? Because there was more bad grades on the old report card over the weekend. Get to that next on The Fan.
Fantasy football season is back, baby. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. So listen and follow Fantasy Football Happy Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. 8:47. Lots to get to in the final hour of the radio program. We were just getting the play-by-play of Danny Meringue's wedding last night. Congrats to the Meringues who got hitched last night. Patrick Harris was in attendance.
Said it was a good venue. It was great.
Going through the details.
He was having a good time, smiling, laughing.
I believe the brand man was there. Casey was there.
Yeah.
And so congrats to Danny and his now missus on the wedding last night, the festivities. Something that was going on yesterday, and I asked this question while you were out, and I'm wondering where your answer would go. Because correct me if I'm wrong, I think you were high on him coming out of college. Now, to be fair, he was the number one overall pick, so not a controversial take, right?
Okay.
Cam Ward, you're a Cam Ward guy.
Yeah, he's
Cam Ward guy.
Bit of a struggle bus in preseason.
It has not been great. Like, the numbers were, you look at the box score and you're like, okay, that's not terrible, but it just was a lot of, there was a strip sack. Hell of a play, by the way, on that strip sack to dive and knock the ball loose. I mean, that's going to be on every teach tape in every defensive room that plays Tennessee if he's loosey-goosey with the football. He played his opening game against the 49ers in the preseason. The Niners essentially played third stringers on defense, and they couldn't move the ball to save their lives. Last night, again, it's like, all right, let's get our starters some reps. Here we go, baby. And there's just not a lot going on there. Mm-hmm. Not a lot offensively. I asked Swag while you were out, when you see him, because we've seen guys have down first years, and you don't necessarily throw him out, right? He's playing for an incompetent organization, a head coach that got fired. Then you got an interim coach. There's nobody really to throw the ball to. But they fixed some of that stuff, right? I think we trust their staff. They added a weapon in the draft.
Well, so, can I time out?
Sure. Go ahead. Throw a challenge.
Do we trust their staff?
I do, at least.
I like Rob Saleh.
On the surface level,
what
I
has
do.
He proven as a head coach?
Literally nothing.
But Brian Daboll got fired out of New York and is back to doing what he did,
Buffalo, Alabama.
Yeah, like, it's been a hot second. So, like,
yeah, he won a playoff game with Danny Dimes, though, so there's a little bit of both there. Mixed bag.
Also beat the Vikings.
And like, also, like, to Robert Saleh's point, and this is a different part of this conversation we could get to with Tennessee. Just Aaron Rodgers rupturing his Achilles.
I agree.
Like, I'm not going to sit here. That's not his fault.
But saying we trust him is different than saying, like,
that's fair.
There's still kind of some left to be proven here, right?
I think their staff's better this year than it was last year. Fair?
I think that.
Now, that's a very low bar.
That's a very
I think
low
even
bar.
I, with my 4-inch vertical,
you
could jump
walk over
that bar. I
could
politely step over.
Yes,
it.
I agree.
So I think their staff has improved. And I asked Swag when he was out, do you see more Caleb Williams or Bryce Young?
Ooh, Bryce Young is the problem with Bryce Young's problem is not actually his ability to, it's his size. Mm-hmm. I've always said, I think if Bryce Young was 6'3",
yeah, it'd be great.
I love Bryce Young. Right. I love everything about Bryce Young. His size is right. Why I'll never buy in.
Cam Ward is listed at 6'2", but I think we're also like, you're tippy toes in
he's
that. I mean, he is an undersized quarterback.
I agree.
Not to the height of Bryce Young, but in a similar category.
Because of how bad year one went, not just for him, but really the franchise. I mean, this is a team that fired a coach in favor of a general manager who then 8 months later fired that general manager and then drafted a guy and chose not to really look after his well-being. So what does he do? He develops bad habits, bad tendencies. He doesn't really quite understand some of the nuanced things that you need to be taught right away. And now he's playing catch-up. I've reminded myself of this, and I'll say this in kind of some defense of Cam Ward, because I'm not out yet. We cannot take what we see in preseason and use it as gospel for what the season's going to mean for all these teams and players.
Nope.
I don't like some of the stuff I've seen, but that being said, I have to allow him time to be like Caleb the first few weeks of the season last year, where I picked the Bears to win the division and then jumped off it, flipped it, because I didn't feel great. There was a lot of like learning moments and, oh my God, he's not understanding it. Oh my God, Ben Johnson's going to get rid of him.
His completion percentage is 54% right now. What's happening?
Yes, like, he's throwing stupid balls still. He's still taking dumb sacks here and there. And then as you saw as the season went on, what happened? He started to kind of get more comfortable, more comfortable, more comfortable. And they won the division. And they got to the divisional round. I think I'd lean that's where more it goes. Now, I hope I'm not wrong. If I end up being wrong, we can jokingly rip up your Cam Ward statement, and I'll say, hey, man, I was wrong. I picked the wrong quarterback. I also just, I truly, truly believe this to my core. Some guys are destined to be great. Some guys are destined to eventually be good. See Sam Darnold.
Yes.
I also think we have a ton of examples, both former local guys, guys from all over the landscape, that never went to the right situations. And once you get kind of broken into a certain mold,
it's hard to overcome it mentally, man.
It is. And it's just, it's hard to break tendencies. So I hope that's not Cam Ward, but I would lean more Caleb, year one, Ben Johnson. Here we go, year one, Brian Daboll.
Yeah.
I also don't love, I love Carnell Tate, at least the idea of it.
Yes. He's got to prove it in the NFL, but yeah.
Wandale Robinson. Calvin Ridley for me is like,
you're hoping Carnell Tate comes in and can have an impact right away.
He is supposed
to
be.
And it's not a guarantee, but you took him so high that you're hoping that that's the result and what you're going to get out of him.
Yeah.
It is interesting because on the other side of this too, like, your point on the coaching staff is fair and valid. We don't know what Saleh is technically as a head coach, and I would use the same quarterback argument you made. Like, we've never really seen him with a full deck of cards. Now, does he have that in Tennessee?
He chose this, though.
And this gets to, and it was interesting, I think it was Kawakami down in the Bay Area during the game last night, and it just wasn't looking pretty for Tennessee, and they were having a hard time moving the ball. Seattle was getting strip sacks and all this on Cam Ward, and reminding us of the idea that at the end of last year, there were a lot of people in the 49ers building who were trying to warn. Now, some of this is self-preservation, too, because Robert Saleh is an elite defensive coordinator.
Yes.
And they wanted him to be around for another year. So there certainly is something for them to gain in this argument. But that they tried to argue at the time, hey, man, don't just jump at the next opportunity. Wait for the right job. Don't just go take a gig, because if it doesn't go well, how many coaches in the history of the NFL have been fired as a head coach for two different organizations and gotten another head coaching job?
Oh, this is it.
Like,
for
it's
him.
Like this. You got one more shot. Yeah. And it's to all the points.
Otherwise, you're Fangio the rest of your life.
Exactly. Like, I'm just going to go back to being a defensive coordinator. To all the points that you've brought up about their ownership situation, what they did to the last coach, what they did to the last GM, the way that they ran Cam Ward, like, they're just not a trustworthy organization.
I would have never picked
that. Right? And maybe it ends up going great this year and Cam Ward takes a step and here we go. Carnell Tate's an offensive rookie of the year and damn, who saw that coming? The Titans are a playoff contender.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL can deliver surprises, but that was the big argument from a lot of people in the 49er building of like, dude, give it enough. Like, a good job will come open. You don't just have to jump at the first opportunity.
Oh.
A lot of this is putting the cart in front of the horse because it's just still preseason, but it has not gone well for Tennessee two games into the
season. I think
preseason.
It sums up. We're having this conversation about them. The other side is like, that's still a really good football team who just suffered a couple bad injuries, but they'll be okay.
They're going to be in the mix all year.
You know, on that point, I remember hearing those, there was some rumbling around the Niners last year that once it was like becoming, he became the focal point of the Titan search, there was a lot of people, and he's got a great relationship with Kyle, that people were trying to hint at like, you sure that team?
That's one.
And I think the tough thing is, one, it's always got to be hard to say no to those opportunities, right? Like, if you think you're great at what you do,
you want to take a chance on yourself,
you believe
right?
in your culture building, you're just going to say, I can overcome these circumstances and morph this to how I need it to be. And I also think he got absolutely railroaded out of New York. And to a certain degree, he's kind of right. The Jets are a disaster organization. But the Rodgers stuff, like, what did we expect him to do there? He's a defensive coach. His starting quarterback was this seasoned vet MVP legend who could not stay healthy. What did we expect? But the Jets are the Jets. They fired him. Tail between your legs, go back, be an elite DC, have an overperforming defense with the injuries you're dealt.
Decimated, injury-wise.
You don't want to wait another year. He didn't want to wait another year. That's abundantly clear. He thought he got railroaded. I'm going to show you this. I'm not going to overreact to what we're seeing, but it's not great. I'll acknowledge that.
Be interesting to see how it plays out. Big year ahead in Tennessee, man. Quarterbacks don't get often more than 2 years to kind of run through and see how you can play. And if he doesn't play well, if they end up with a top five pick next year, they're taking a quarterback. That's just the way that this works in the National Football League. So big year ahead for Tennessee. Did not look great against Seattle. To your point, Seattle feeling great going into the year despite some of the banged up injuries that they have so far in the preseason. We have a lot to get to in the final hour of the radio program. I'm going to stick in the National Football League with some other tidbits out of the weekend. We got a couple of injury scares that happened, but maybe aren't as big of a deal. And one is officially as big of a deal as we thought it might be. It's a loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1 FM, The Fam.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanses.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.